So I'm Caitlin, and I also have no financial or other disclosures to make. I'd like to start off by acknowledging my co-authors on my paper, Mary Catherine Augustine, who helped collect the data for this project, Amy Resnick, Susan Gross, Joy Nanda, and David Page, and we are a research team at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health doing a evaluation of the Maryland WIC breastfeeding peer counselor program. And this is a baby-friendly presentation, so enjoy. Just an overview of the current state of breastfeeding. As most of us know, it imparts numerous health, social, and economic benefits to mothers, babies, and families. And the Healthy People 2010 and the proposed Healthy People objectives for 2020 say that 75% of mothers will initiate and breastfeed in the early postpartum period, that 50% will continue to 6 months, and that 25% will continue to a year. So nationally, we've met the first objective, but only the first objective. The other objectives, there's actually been little progress over the last 15 years. Among WIC participants, there's lower rates for all of the markers on the Healthy People objectives, and exclusive breastfeeding rates are lower for everyone. So although there's a 75% initiation rate, that doesn't mean that those mothers aren't already introducing formula before they leave even the hospital. So non-initiation, and this is literature on what mothers say their reasons are for not initiating breastfeeding. So various research projects, about half of mothers will just say they didn't like breastfeeding or the idea of breastfeeding, and that's why they chose not to do it. And between 2 and 30% list these other reasons, that they needed to return to work or school, had other children to care for, were using medication, wanted their body back, didn't want to be tied down, had too many household duties, had a partner who objected, or had a baby who was sick. And note that the categories aren't mutually exclusive. So the mother could say, I didn't want to, and, or you know, something along those lines. And then 25% had another reason that wasn't listed in a category provided in the study. As far as early termination and early supplementation, mothers say most frequently that they decided to begin introducing formula even if they hadn't stopped breastfeeding because of inadequate milk supply, or the baby wasn't satisfied, that they were having pain, or the baby wouldn't latch. Other reasons, which tended to be cited by a much lower number of mothers, were that they had twins or a higher order birth, their breasts dried up, they just wanted to stop, they were returning to work or school, the mother was ill, the infant was ill or had a very long NICU stay, neonatal intensive care unit stay, they wanted others to feed the baby, or their partner objected to their continuing. And again, these categories were not mutually exclusive. So academic research indicates that there are other reasons that women begin using formula beyond the reasons that mothers themselves are listing, where there have been correlations or causation established between a practice and an outcome. So among them are lack of prenatal breastfeeding education and support, a lack of postpartum breastfeeding education and support, inaccurate information from health providers, inconsistent information from health providers, cesarean delivery, lack of support during a birth, the hospital not following baby-friendly practices, mother's inexperience, mother's lack of confidence, lack of social contacts that the mother has who have breastfeeding experience, societal disapproval, the infant being given formula in the hospital, the family receiving a formula sample bag at hospital discharge, and difficulties with pumping. So what's going on? And the questions that I address here are, why are mothers saying that they're using formula? And are they telling the real story to researchers and health practitioners? So as health practitioners or people trying to find out more about moms, when we ask moms, are we really finding out what's going on? Do mothers really consider structural or iatrogenic reasons for formula use? And do researchers and practitioners fully consider the complexity of reasons for formula use? So my study is based on the Maryland WIC Breastfeeding Peer Counseling of Program Evaluation and the qualitative component of it. We interviewed breastfeeding peer counselors at three Maryland WIC sites, one urban, one suburban, and one semi-rural. And at those three sites, we had a convenient sample of WIC participants who were all non-Hispanic, white, and black, because Hispanic women in our program have such higher breastfeeding rates, whereas the rates of white and black women are under about 50% and are about the same. That they had received WIC breastfeeding peer counseling services and had an infant under age one. We conducted semi-structured interviews, which we recorded, transcribed, and entered into qualitative analysis software. The interviews lasted between 10 and 45 minutes. We had 75 respondents evaluated here. 18 did not initiate breastfeeding at all. 57 breastfed at least once. 9 were not using any formula at the time of the interview. And 1 is fully established as not having used any formula at all. There were 3 others who might not have used formula at all, but it was hard to tell. Demographically, 49 of our mothers were non-Hispanic Black, 26 were non-Hispanic White. Among the Black mothers, we had 3 African immigrants and 1 Caribbean immigrant, and among the White mothers, these included 3 women who were practicing Orthodox Jews and 1 woman who was an Italian immigrant. The mother's age ranged from 18 to 41 with a mean around 25. The babies ranged in age from 6 days to 12 months with a mean of about 5 months. Mothers had from 1 to 6 children. The mean number of children was around 2 and the mode was 1. And educationally, the mothers ranged from being a high school dropout to having a master's degree, and the mode was high school diploma. So what were mothers saying? The non-initiators, as in the literature, their main reasons was that they didn't want to, and other common reasons were returning to work, medical concerns, fears of the breastfeeding being painful, that they were smoking, or that they didn't want to change their eating habits. Reasons for supplementing or early weaning, the mother was, again, as in the literature, not making enough milk or the baby not getting enough milk, difficulty latching and painful breastfeeding. Others were hospital nurse recommendation, returning to work, pumping difficulties, pediatrician recommendation for jaundice or colic, having to take medication, or wanting some freedom, you know, by having others be able to feed the baby. The conditions that are asterisked here are ones where the mother reported something that wasn't backed up, regularly was not backed up by later statements or was contradicted by other information she gave, or was on the side of supplementing and early weaning, particularly mother not getting enough milk, has been indicated in the literature to be a matter of perception rather than at reality. So the inside story versus the ready excuse. One thing that we found among our mothers who, especially ones who didn't initiate, was that they would often state an acceptable reason for not initiating, and then upon further probing, their reasoning didn't make any sense. Or they would state the real reason, but upon further probing, they would come up with a more acceptable excuse. I guess finding, you know, that as we were talking to them, that somehow we didn't find their answer adequate and they better come up with something better. So the 3 main reasons that came up in the ready excuse category, the first was medical reasons. Among our mothers who had medical reasons, whether they were legitimate or not, most of them had never planned to breastfeed in the first place. So this is one example. The mother said, asked the mother, so tell me why you decided not to breastfeed him. The medical reasons. Which medical reasons? Well, I was taking Gardasil, and he said, my doctor said I couldn't. Your doctor said that, not to breastfeed. Yeah, not while taking that medicine. Well, of course, Gardasil, which is the cervical cancer vaccine, is not something that she would have had to start taking immediately after giving birth. And there is some indication that it's actually safe to take Gardasil while breastfeeding, although who knows what her doctor actually told her. But when I continued talking with her, and later on in the interview, I asked her again, why did you not consider breastfeeding? She said, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know personally, but it's just not for me. It wasn't for you. The bottle is easier. It's easier. Do you know if your mom breastfed you? No, no, she didn't breastfeed. So we can see that this mother was really profoundly uncomfortable with the idea of breastfeeding. She didn't want to. Her mother hadn't. She didn't have familiarity with it. She perceived formula feeding as an easier thing to do. And we had other mothers, for instance, one who said, well, I didn't breastfeed because I had breast reduction surgery. And but later on, she revealed in the interview, well, the doctor had said she might not be able to breastfeed. But she didn't have the surgery until after she had her second child, and she hadn't breastfed her first or second child either, which indicates that she never had any intention of breastfeeding. But the fact that she'd had this breast reduction surgery was something to tell people, basically to get them off of her back. A lot of mothers are experiencing healthcare workers as invasive and paternalistic and would like to be left alone. And, you know, giving a ready excuse is a way to terminate the conversation. Another reason women gave is smoking. Now, the literature indicates that while smoking is, of course, bad for you and bad for anybody who's exposed to it, it is not a reason not to breastfeed. The worst thing a mother can do is not breastfeed and smoke. So even if you're smoking, it's preferable to breastfeed than to feed formula. When asked at the beginning of an interview, one mother was very frank with me. Were you thinking about it? Of breastfeeding? No, I didn't want to breastfeed him. Okay, you never thought about that. Right, you didn't want to do that. Right, okay, can you tell me why? Because I didn't want to breastfeed. Okay, right, was it an uncomfortable idea to you? Or no, my mother never breastfeeded with us and we came up healthy and good, so. But later on in the conversation, when we continued talking to her, I said, so you mentioned that you were comfortable about making the decision about not breastfeeding because your mom didn't breastfeed. Right, and another actually because I smoked cigarettes. Not during my pregnancy, but I knew I was gonna smoke afterwards. And so the mother had, you know, told me, you know, basically the real reasons why she wasn't breastfeeding. But when I continued to discuss with her what was going on, she started to talk about smoking, again, a sort of leave me alone kind of method. This was common. Another mother also said, you know, she didn't breastfeed because she smoked, and then later on in the interview revealed that she hadn't been smoking during her second pregnancy. We asked her, oh, okay, well, why did you decide not to breastfeed that child? She said, well, I thought I would start smoking again. So another reason is returning to work. Returning to work is a really common reason given in the literature for mothers not breastfeeding. And what we found is it is a very common reason for mothers to begin supplementing. However, among the mothers who said that they were not going to breastfeed because they were planning to return to work, and there were six of them, only one of them had actually considered breastfeeding. She had actually breastfed her four previous children and had decided not to breastfeed her fifth one. For the reason, absolutely, I'm going right back to work. I've pumped before, I don't like it, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with having to let my milk dry up, you know, at the end of my maternity leave, it hurts, I'm just not doing it. But among the other mothers, none of them had really considered breastfeeding to begin with, and this was a great example. This mother had a 3-month-old baby. So she says, I knew I was going to bottle feed just because, you know, I wanted to get back to work and it would be kind of hard to breastfeed and work at the same time. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Oh, I don't work right now. But before I had him, I was in warehousing. Oh, so what are your plans at this point? Right now, I just stay home with him and his dad works 6 days a week. And I think in maybe a month or two more, I'm going to look into private daycare and then go back to work. So, but if we talked to this mom more, we found out she was bottle fed as a baby. She got some prenatal education, but no counseling about breastfeeding or individual talking with her. Her baby was in the NICU, and they suggested in the NICU that she try pumping, and she said that that really weirded her out. The only person she ever knew who tried breastfeeding only did it for a couple days and said it didn't work out. And she did try putting the baby to breast once when she was at home, and he screamed and flailed at her. So that was a very unpleasant experience for her. The other thing that we need to consider with mothers, as far as the real reasons they're choosing to breastfeed or use formula or both, is their individual agency versus the structural things that they face. So mothers generally credit their own agency for their decisions, and yet we know that obstetrical policy, hospital policy, pediatric policy, marketing, community norms, and social networks have big influences on what mothers decide to do. We found that most mothers faced prenatal indifference to their feeding choices, that 20 mothers reported that there was no mention made of breastfeeding at all during their prenatal appointments. Again, a limit to this data is that it's self-reported, but certainly there was nothing memorable said to them. 10 reported that somebody asked what their plans were. 36 said that they got some education. This varied from somebody handing them a pamphlet to actually having a breastfeeding class, but was usually a brief verbal statement saying breastfeeding's healthier for the baby. And 7 reported that they actually received individual counseling, which was usually provided by a lactation consultant either at the prenatal clinic or someplace that they were referred to offsite. So one thing that mothers, I don't know how to go back here, but, all right, C-sections. We know that C-sections reduce breastfeeding success. The C-section rates at the hospitals used by the sample mothers varied from about 26% to about 40%. 34% of the mothers in the sample delivered by C-section, which is slightly above the national rate, which is between 32 and 33%. And 28% of mothers delivering by C-section had babies who were fed formula without their consent. We know that baby-friendly practices help mothers to breastfeed. There are no baby-friendly hospitals in the entire state of Maryland, and during the time of the study, there were actually no bag-free hospitals in the state of Maryland. Mothers were most likely to experience step 7, rooming in, and mothers with babies in the NICU were encouraged to practice step 5. They were told about pumping for the most part, but only a handful of mothers experienced any of the other 10 steps. Steps 4, 6, and 9 to help mothers initiate breastfeeding, to give infants no food other than breast milk, and to give no pacifiers were regularly violated by hospital staff. At the hospital, 5 mothers said that doctors or nurses were actually hostile towards their breastfeeding intentions. 20 reported that they received no support. 33 said some doctors, nurses, or lactation consultants were supportive, but some were discouraging, indifferent, or hostile. And 14 said that all staff at the hospital did encourage and support breastfeeding. So an example of discouraging, one mother said, who'd had a cesarean, said they rolled me out back into my room and I was begging to hold the baby. The father put him on me and they let him. I couldn't feel him, but I was just looking at him. And then they took him. I told them I wanted to breastfeed. They told me there's really no way I could breastfeed because of the kind of condition I was in. And I told them I was going to. So they wanted to give him a bottle, and they rushed him back down. So did he have a bottle? They gave him one little one ready-made, you know, they gave him one of those. And I told them I didn't want him to have it. They got mad. They brought him to me, and with my little numb self, I fed him like the book showed me. Hospitals often promoted formula. Almost all breastfeeding mothers either had supplements suggested to them or chose to supplement on their own. 9 babies received formula without their mother's consent. Most of them were birthed by cesarean, but some were vaginally birthed. Almost every mother received a formula discharge bag, whether she was formula feeding or breastfeeding. So, for instance, one mother who had a vaginal birth and whose baby was fed formula without her consent said, well, right after he was born, they gave him the bottle first. Did you ask them to do that? Without my permission. Oh, no, because it was some kind of complication, and they didn't ask me whether I was going to breastfeed or not, but they gave him a bottle. Almost every, and mothers received formula discharge bags even when they said that they were planning to exclusively breastfeed. One of our mothers reported that the formula in her bag said on it, for the breastfed baby. At the NICU, 7 mothers reported their babies were admitted. No mothers were allowed to feed at the breasts in the NICU. 6 babies were bottle-fed formula instead of or in addition to pumped milk. Only one baby was syringe-fed mother's milk. And in pediatric practice, even though the early weeks of breastfeeding are the most difficult, and most mothers saw their pediatrician shortly after leaving the hospital, and most actually consulted their pediatrician when they were having difficulty, 22 said that their pediatrician said nothing during the visit. 26 said the pediatrician just asked, are you breastfeeding or bottle feeding? 18 received verbal support, and 2 said that they actually received what we might call comprehensive support. Most common verbal support was things like the mom said she was having trouble with breastfeeding, and the pediatrician would say, stay away from bottles. Norms and social networks, most mothers were bottle-fed themselves. Many reported that they didn't know anybody who had breastfed or only knew people with negative experiences. They were often concerned about breastfeeding in public, or their baby would breastfeed until it was too old, which for mothers ranged from being a few months to being up to, say, around age 2. Mothers were more likely to breastfeed if they did have several friends or family members who had breastfed successfully. And they were more likely to breastfeed if they had a partner, because many of these mothers did not have a partner in the home, and the partner approved of breastfeeding. We did have a lesbian mom in the sample. So the outcome, only one mother reported to us that her baby had never received any formula. So implications, mothers do not want practitioners to disapprove of their decisions and may state acceptable reasons for doing what they do. Mothers usually locate reasons for not breastfeeding in the self as an individual decision or personal difficulties that they experience. But health policy, social networks, marketing, and community norms, which are rarely acknowledged as barriers by mothers, have enormous impact on what they do. An individual woman could have as 12 reasons, both that she stated and that were implied, for choosing to use formula. And that the breastfeeding peer counselor program at WIC expands a mother's social network with women who can develop rapport, model breastfeeding, and provide encouragement and positive feedback. This study supports the imperative of having such programs for mothers in the absence of the support that they get from other communities. So thank you very much.